All right, a pleasure being back with you. Boy, I'm excited about the game today. The White Sox have won the first two. The Giants trying to break that three-game losing streak. Lucas Giolito on the hill, and the Giants an opener with John Brebbia. A pleasure to bring in James Feagan. He covers the Chi Sox, the White Sox, for The Athletic. James, how are you today?
I'm good, and you?
Very good. I'm looking forward to the game today, and I'm looking at the numbers of, first of all, break up the White Sox. You told me a few days ago they're having trouble. They don't look so bad.
Yeah, it's been an interesting reversal of roles, and I'm sure welcome for them to kind of see these close games that turn on defensive mistakes going the other way, because I think they came to this weekend with the lowest fielding percentage in the American League, and they've been kind of the victim of a lot of these kind of well-pitched games going down to the wire, kind of breaking on their defensive mistakes. So to be on the opposite edge of that these past 2 days has probably been a welcome break for them and something they sorely needed before a very crucial stretch for them.
Yeah, this, as I've said on the show, what do they have, a ton of games left with Minnesota and Cleveland, so their season really is ahead of them.
Yeah, they basically play nothing but AL Central opponents from now until the All-Star break, so their front office is going to get a very, very full picture of where they stand in the division before they kind of approach what they're going to do at the deadline and really formalize what they are. Because I think right now, you know, this is what they view as their contention window. They would want to be buyers if they have any reason to be buyers. And I think if they're floating around 500 still, they probably would still lean that way. But this will give them an answer coming up. And right now it looks like it's trending upwards for them, at least to be able to hang on during this West Coast stretch and play decent baseball.
Well, you know, we get to see him, and, of course, you get to follow him all the time. And I think about the strength of the team, but you match him up with Minnesota and Cleveland. If you were going to add to the White Sox team and said, okay, we want to do something, we're going to add in this position, because they've got the chance to do it, where would you go?
I mean, technically, I would say second base is their weakest position at the moment. You know, it's something they tried to address in the offseason. They wound up doing a one-year deal with Josh Harrison. He actually played really well in June after one of his weaker starts of his career. It's more of a type of production they need than even a position. They need, you know, left-handed balance to line up, something that the Giants are able to obviously offer. And, you know, they threw at Dylan Cease a lot yesterday. Police gave him a very hard time. And they need, you know, on-base ability, someone who can work counts. They have a lot of aggressive hitters who, when they're hitting, everything looks great, but they tend to have trouble really making a pitcher work or shortening those outings from starters when they're not having their hits fall or not driving the baseball. So they need kind of left-handed balance, on-base ability, and particularly if they're going to add that, it needs to be someone who can defend a position, because they already got Andrew Vaughn, they already got Jose Abreu, they got Eloy Jimenez, they got Jake Berger. They have a lot of guys who you'd like to work them at DH or first base more often than they already are capable of. So they need somebody who can provide some versatility as well. That's really hard to find. You talk about somebody who's left-handed, get on base, and man up the middle position. You're starting to talk about an elite player at that point.
Boy, okay. They do chase a lot, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're having a particularly chase-heavy week, and they are already one of the most frequently chasing out of the zone teams in all of baseball. Now, that works for some of the guys. You know, Tim Anderson has a very high chase rate, but Tim Anderson's also uniquely capable of kind of spraying pitches on the outer half or off the outer half of right field for singles. Mm-hmm. But the entire team doesn't have the kind of same elite of contact ability, and it can go wrong for them when they're not as disciplined as they need to be.
Well, today should be an interesting game with Giolito. Now, of course, we remember him, of course, Southern California, Harvard, Westlake, a no-hitter. Big trade coming to the White Sox, all-star Cy Young consideration. And then this year he's sort of fallen off the cliff. What do you expect today, and what's happened to him?
Well, he had a case of COVID, I want to say, in the middle of May. And even though he's fully vaccinated, he had it last year, he said this one was even worse than the case he dealt with at the end of last season. And you know, he doesn't like to use excuses or anything like that, but the correlation is pretty clear that afterwards he came off the list. He basically had five to seven starts that just did not look like himself, and he couldn't get the same kind of mechanical consistency that he had before then. His fastball it wasn't even so much a velocity drop. It was not getting the same level of ride and spin. He throws a, you know, low to mid-90s heater up at the top of the zone, and it behaves better than it maybe even looks on the radar gun. It has a lot of rising action the guys tend to swing under, and he was not getting that at the same level after he came back. Now, his last start with the against the Angels earlier this week, even that still started out rough, but I think the last two to three innings for him to get through that with, you know, six innings, two runs allowed, he really started to look a little bit like himself those last couple frames. I think he retired his last nine batters that outing, and he said that he felt a lot better, a lot more in sync at the end of it. He's a, you know, a phenomenally large human being. It takes a lot for him to be mechanically in sync, and it seemed like he finally started to get some of that rhythm his last time out. So you could see, you know, the Lucas Giolito that, you know, everyone's become accustomed to these last couple of years today, but, you know, it's not a given the way he's been dealing with, you know, inconsistency the last couple of weeks.
You know, the lefty Banks pitched really well the last 2 days. Now, he's pitched three innings over a couple of days. I imagine he wouldn't be available today. How do they get away with it, with only one lefty? How do they do that?
Well, it certainly wasn't the plan. You know, Tanner Banks is a really interesting story. He's basically a seven-year minor leaguer. He was constantly, when I was covering their rebuild, the prospects, he'd be this journeyman arm who was making the start that day while I was at the ballpark to see Eloy Menez or, you know, one of their other top prospects. But he saw a velocity jump in last spring training with some drills that he did that were very similar to Giolito. But the original plan for this team was to throw Garrett Crochet and Aaron Bummer out at you as their lefties. Garrett Crochet tore his UCL in spring training. He's out for the year. Aaron Bummer has a lat strain, so he's out kind of indefinitely a little bit. They said it's going to be a slower walk back for him, so I don't even know if you'd necessarily see him before later this month. So they had, you know, two of the guys they really trusted to be later inning weapons for them to be their left-handed out of the bullpen, and they're both down at the point. So they're kind of making do with what they have. Tanner Banks is a long man for a lot of the season, so the fact that he's been able to come in and get this very left-handed, heavy Giants lineup out is speaks very well to him and maybe stabilizes his place going forward.
How do you like working with Tony La Russa?
I think it's been a lot better this season to deal with him in person. I think Zoom, he's been managing a long time, but he has not been doing Zoom conferences for a long time. It's a bit more stilted, but now you get a little bit more of how he speaks. You get the rhythm of dealing with him a bit more. You get the frequency of him getting sharing, you know, stories from 30 years ago a lot more. It's definitely been a unique experience. And, you know, this year has definitely been very rickety with fans expressing their ire or chanting for his job during low moments of the season, which has been frequently in the first half. But I think you get to understand him a bit more, dealing with him in person more than last season over Zoom.
Well, he, of course, was fired by the White Sox in the 80s by the Hawk. Ken Harrelson fired him, but the White Sox never changed managers midstream.
Yeah, I think we were actually asking the general manager, Rick Hahn, about that a couple of weeks back, and I think the only example he could come with was Gene Lamont, and I think he even referenced that Gene Lamont was fired probably when he was in high school. So, yeah, it's not not an organizational trend that has a lot of parallels, and it's not something I see them doing, even unless things – something unique would have to happen. I don't think there's a performance-based issue or them being 500 would lead them to kind of make something this midstream, especially given that Tony was hired with so much support and so much advocacy from, Chairman Jerry Reinsdorf. You know, you have to get ownership approval for those type of extreme moves midseason, and I can't imagine there being that being in place for Tony La Russa, given, you know, how he was hired.
No, they don't roll that way. Boy, James Fegan with us. A pleasure to have him on. He covers the White Sox for The Athletic. Steve Stone is a favorite out here. Of course, he played for the Giants, and we talk to him every once in a while. But is he having a beef with the players, with his partner? They've sort of taken sides. Is it good-natured, or are they kind of on his case a little bit?
I haven't seen it beyond the fact that they all decided they were going to wear Jason Benetti fan club T-shirts this road trip. It hasn't been like a big back and forth. I know that he, speaks his mind. He's critical at times. There's a little bit of misunderstanding at times when the players aren't running out, and it doesn't look good on the broadcast or to the fans. And Steve noted it. But later on, Tony will say like, "Well, we've told these guys, who have some lingering leg issues, to take it easy on the base pass." And that's kind of the case, up and down the roster. There's a lot of kind of nagging injuries or guys on the IL they're dealing with, and they're not a team that necessarily lights you up from the effort they exert on the bases right now just because of how banged up they are. And I think that, you know, Steve has noted that a couple times that, you know, may have been noticed by the players, but I don't see it as a big thing, at least not yet. But, you know, we'll see. It could be a long, difficult year.
Well, we'll see what happens. As we wrap it up with James Fegan, the Relief Corps, you wrote a story about they're stand-up people. When things don't go right, they're right there to explain it, the old Dennis Eckersley way that when Tony had him.
Yeah, I just thought it was something to fun to note, and, you know, something that maybe fans don't necessarily appreciate as much. As, you know, there was a lot of things going wrong with this team. You know, they definitely struggled offensively so much early in the season. So there are a lot of one-run games they're playing where everything was kind of living and dying on every pitch. So I admired how much the kind of the bullpen, at least in those early going when things went wrong, would kind of put it on themselves every time they lost any kind of lead, even if they weren't working with much margin for error, because it's just kind of the code that ball players come up with. Is if you're pitching there on the mound and you see the lead go the other side, that you kind of stand up for it and say that it's all on you. And I think people are, you know, want to heap a lot of blame on players, and, you know, it's important for them to show, and they said as much, that they to show that they take it as seriously as fans do. I think it's something worth noting.
Terrific. All right, one more. It's September 1st. Are the Sox in first place, second, or third in the Central?
I'm going to go second. I think, obviously, the last 2 days, it makes it easier to view optimism, but it really hasn't been a high level of play with their defense all year long. So I think that's going to make it really hard, even if they do get kind of their offense back. You know, with Yasmani Grandal, Eloy Jimenez getting back healthy, maybe Yoan Moncada hitting more like he did last season. Their offense could be better, but I think it's going to be really slog to overtake Minnesota, that I think is, you know, a legitimate playoff team. It could take them all season to really work back from the deficit they've made. Whereas I think the Cleveland Guardians are probably, you know, a couple of years, a couple of pieces away from really being a team that can hold up all the way down the stretch. So I could see them overtaking Cleveland by then. I think it might be a little bit longer battle to really, you know, handle Minnesota.
All right. James, great to have you on. I appreciate it. Be well. We'll catch up with you in a few weeks. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is James Fegan. Now it's time for this week's Community Spotlight, sponsored by Chilton Auto Body, with 15 locations to serve you. This month's spotlight is on the San Francisco Foster Youth Fund.